This is Midwest Weird, an audio literary magazine from Broads and Books Productions. We're the home of weird fiction and nonfiction by Midwestern writers. Today, we have the first episode of a new audio drama from Amy Lee Lillard, the co-creator and producer of Midwest Weird. This is the first of 7 parts. All episodes of the show, A Woman as a God, will be available to stream on July 9th, wherever you listen to podcasts. Monday. In the morning, I'm stiff, as I always am. Things popping and creaking as I head downstairs to the kitchen. The body gets tired of the soul after so many years, starts slowly shutting down, hardening and breaking. By 83, my body seems surprised and frustrated each time I wake. Leaving my rooms, I pass Kira's, where her body still lays. I held her hand yesterday, long after she gently died, joining all the others. I'll call Vic later, ask him to bring the shroud and shovel. We long agreed, all of us, that it made no sense to follow the rituals, pay the money, enter a church. So we made our own burial ground outside our castle in the back. We decided this when we all breathed and laughed. It's a comfort and a horror that they're all back there now. Kira's doors are open. All the doors to everyone's rooms are open now. I have full reign of our castle. Can snoop anywhere I like, dig in any drawers. I'll only find what I already know is there. Favorite vibrators and dildos we'd showed off proudly. Old notes airing long revealed drama. The odd horsehead mask and creepy, crazy-eyed painting from an estate sale that we'd pass around at birthdays. But I do like to sleep in their beds. Stay in Elliot and Ben's California King with built-in bookshelves, or Patty and Joan's sleigh bed, or Marcus's Queen with the best pillows. Now I can add Kira's thin mattress that reminds me of old futons, that terrible turn-of-the-century beast that thankfully died. I take the elevator one floor down to the Great Hall. In its kitchen, my draft is on the table. Last night, after Kira, I'd had that burst of idea. For the first time in months, even years. It was the same story, the one I'd set aside months and years ago, the story that I could never get down. The story that gave me dreams and nightmares, and sometimes worse, things I couldn't explain. But, left alone, the story came again. The papers on the table showed that frenetic, frantic purge of it. And at the kitchen table, in the end chair, sits Kira. "Huh," she says. I stand still, shocked but not surprised. She's the same woman I'd left dead in her room, but she has the color of health again. Instead of gray ash, her skin shines black. Instead of meager tufts of hair, her thick crown is back. Instead of sticks of bone, her body has meat and heft. She looks 20 years younger, like blood still pumps thickly, wetly through her veins. "Shannon," she says. "I died?" "You did," I say. I clear my throat and say it again, louder, reminding both of us. "Do I get to stay here now?" I walk stiffly to the chair next to her. I touch her shoulder. There's substance, a physical thing with give. "I think I felt that," she says as I ease down next to her. "Me too." I reach out, feel the coarse edges of her hair on my fingertips. She gives me that look, the one that tells me I'm the clueless white woman touching a black woman's hair. We both smile as I pull away, laugh. "Well, shit," she says. "This isn't what we expected." Months ago, Kira and I sat in the Great Hall. 6 units in our building and 5 occupied, so we'd all decided to turn the last one into a giant open space for eating, for drinking, for talking. We called our building the castle, our rooms the keep. Here was the Great Hall. As the years accumulated, we spent most of our time there, feeling the crush of momentum, the clock spinning faster, our bodies nearing expiration. Kira and I had just buried Joan, next to the others. The hall echoed with the voices of those gone. We talked over weak vodka tonics, grief tightening our throats. "I think it's just sleep," Kira said. "What is?" I said. "Death." She had a distance in her eyes, her vision caught on something far out of our castle bounds. "What did Joan call it?" I asked. "The deep?" "Capital letters," she said. "The deep. Like the sleeping curse in fairy tales." "Right," I said. I heard Joan's voice, the way her laughter rolled around the room, caught us all in its wake. She was our mom, the one we'd all hoped for and never had, the one with loving arms and never-ending baked goods, the one that loved cute knitted hats and cozy dogs on blankets, just as much as a gory cult documentary and MLM leaders with big hair. Even when her cancer ate away some of her softness, her joy, she could still make us laugh. I pictured her on a Baroque fainting couch, arms crossed, eyes gently closed, cursed to sleep until her princess came. Except, no, she wouldn't be cursed. It would be a choice. Joan would choose to sleep until Patty came, woke her with a kiss and a shove, and they ran off together into whatever the other side offered. "I don't think it's like a curse," Kira said. She sucked at her straw, her hands trembling lightly. "Just a really restful, black sleep." I nodded. We had all been raised with a Midwestern God and Jesus, with heaven and hell. But around the time we went to state college in the 90s, had our first sex, named ourselves for who we were, we left that behind. Our families of blood would remind us, threaten us with what they believed came after life, the damnation awaiting us. But we wanted to have a life, to live more than they ever had. "You know what I want it to be?" I asked. "Like a library," I said. "I want to die and be able to jump into different stories, live other lives, watch other times." "Do you get to choose the book?" "You get to choose all the books," I said. "So, you know, you can skip the dystopias if you want and go straight to Charlotte Bronte." "And do you watch or participate?" "Both," I said, "or whichever feels better." "I like that," Kira said. She leaned back into the thick rocker. It creaked as she rocked, loud in the room's silence, the castle's echo. "I like that too," I said. "But I think I prefer the sleep," she said. Kira, dead, sits next to me, talking to me. "Are the others here too?" she says. "I haven't seen them." I glance in the direction I'd come. Would I find them all in their rooms, waiting like her? "When did I die?" she asks. "You don't remember?" She takes a breath, or the illusion of one. "I remember being in my rooms, and you were sitting with me, and I had a sense of something moving, or not moving, like my body was turning off." "That was just yesterday, just a few hours ago." "It feels like," she says, and stops, forehead creased. "Actually, I don't know what it feels like." I can't help. After watching her fall into her last fitful sleep, her failing heart beating her last, I pass the afternoon and evening hours in my fugue writing state, my sense of time lost, sped up, gone in an instant. I don't know what a minute feels like, or a year, she says. Did I ever? I put my hand on hers, feel the soft give, like a foam mattress, kinetic sand. Maybe it doesn't matter, I say. She touches her own arms, her legs. Maybe it never did. In the Great Hall, after Ben died, we sat in a loose circle, Kira, Joan, and myself. The three of us drinking a toast to the last man in our world. What time is it? One of us asked, a robotic deadness to her voice. The question an automatic jolt to my system, a quick hit of anxious energy. Was I late? Was I missing something? Had time run out for this wake? For the three of us? For the castle? Kira and Joan glanced at the clock on the wall, the antiquated tool that still dictated what happened next. We should eat, one of them said. I'm not hungry, said the other. Me, lost in the idea of timelessness. Is that what death was? Did Ben care about time now? Did he register it? His death was quick, coming in an afternoon nap. I hoped that time held no sway over anything that remained of Ben, always pushing us to do new things, to fill the time we had left with experience, to explore all that the world held. No matter that the world outside the castle was a threat, had long been one. In his old age, he had the most gentle of dementia, returning him to the days before, when he would offer up concerts and plays and art, pack his days with activities, when weather and people still allowed for that. I hoped his molecules spread throughout what remained of nature, touched what remained of artists. I hoped I was breathing him in now. The others too. My friends stared at the floor near their socked feet. I glanced out the floor-to-ceiling windows, my eyes seeking the small cemetery we'd been building, the Castle Kirk. We could play a game, Joan said, the makings of a smile. Don't you fucking dare, I said, and they laughed. We finally got rid of that bastard pushing card games on us, I said, and now this? Kira stands. Walks around the kitchen on her dead feet. Is death living here for eternity? She asks. This isn't bad. For sure, I say. I feel the edges of excitement crowding my words, making them shake. I loved it here. I do love it here. She nods, watching her feet move. My forehead creases as I stare at her, trying to read the visual stimuli that she is, the code. I want this to be real. Need her to be here. I didn't want to be alone, I say. When I knew your time was coming, I was so scared. I didn't want to be the last one. Alone, she says. But I guess one of us had to be last, I say, and I was the most used to being alone. I remember, she says, I felt alone before we moved here. I'd been left alone. Someone died. Stevie. Oh, she says with a gasp. Stevie. The two of them were a unit as long as I'd known her, and then Stevie was taken from us 3 decades ago, long before the castle. Kira had been alone since. A true alone, made by nature and the cruel god of colon cancer. Not like me. Alone by the whims of the gods of poor role models and avoidant attachment personality and the autism spectrum. But if this is death, Kira says, if I get to still be, where is Stevie? After Elliot died, we took turns holding Ben. In the great hall, my arm around him as he shuddered and melted, Joan holding his hand, Kira crushing him to her chest. I thought of Elliot watching this scene. A part of him would feel everything, but the other part of him, the part like me, would cover that heart with snark. He'd remind us of the time Ben accidentally started a drunk dance floor fight with a lesbian, how Ben was terrible at gifts, how getting in a car with him behind the wheel was a dance with death. I stepped away from the trio and went to the restroom. Shaky arms held the sink and I heaved. When I cried, a rare phenomenon, my body always sounded the alarm. I pictured a cockpit with alarm bells, gauges spinning and whirling. My stomach tried to vomit, and my bowels tried to empty, and toes lost all feeling, and my cries ended up a gagging, dripping mess. I could usually hold it all in, but Elliot. I wanted him to haunt me. I wanted the aneurysm that killed him to give him back, give him more time. I wanted to hear him in my head. I wanted to relive our superhero movie outings, complaining about a lack of shirtlessness. I wanted to hear his caricature of a Southern Iowa accent. I wanted to see him drunk on Kim Crawford, taking his own shirt off, then passing out in a recliner, legs crossed like a lady. But in death, I suspected his heart would lead him, make him take up residence in Ben's heart. No need for jokes as defense mechanism, not when all defenses were obliterated. Stevie, says Kira, leaning against the wall. Maybe they're here, I say. You're the first I've seen. Maybe everyone is here. Or maybe it's just going in reverse, and Joan will pop up next, then Ben, then Elliot. Yeah, she says. She sounds so real. Words floating on breath, the way they do when our bodies breathe and talk at once. I want her to be real. But I also know that I wanted this so badly, this state of not being alone, that I might be making this. This conversation, this vision, even the feelings of my fingers. My brain could be manufacturing it all. When my friends were living, I used jokes and jazz hands to deflect from emotion and attention and anything too real. Now my brain had to create something new, big, remarkable, to distract from the well of fear and grief climbing up my throat. Kira, this image of Kira could be my new shield from wandering the castle alone. And that could all be true, and I don't care. Tell me, I say, tell me what this feels like. Like a shift, she says after a moment. A tiny slip. Like there's gaps in the air. Little holes everywhere that we never see. I think of the night sky, how it used to be black with tiny holes punched in the surface, letting in the long dead light from other worlds. Gateways to other realities. That's a good way to frame it, she says. It takes us a moment. Wait, I say as she turns to me, eyes wide. You heard what I was thinking? Oh, fuck, she says. We were still trying to make the wakes fun when Patty died. Five of us left, all gripping our glasses in the great hall, music playing, soft hugs instead of death grips. Remember when, one of us would say, and the story was always a bit muddled, a bit fudged, key details missing and others stretched. Joan sat in one of the armchairs, smiling and laughing with us, lapsing into quiet every so often. I told her we could swap rooms if she wanted, if she needed to be away from the home suffused with Patty. She declined, intent on curling up with their dogs and easing their grief. The animals had always loved Patty with a fervor, drawn to her quiet, her steadiness. Joan was the boisterous one, fighting back the silence with stories and one-liners, offering love and friendship to all. Patty, the prize found behind the hidden curtain. I took breaks from the wake, standing before the window facing the back. The woods, we called it, the small piece of backyard with centuries-old trees, branches bent with the day's wind advisory. Before it, the shed-sized greenhouses Patty had built to house Joan's plants and garden, and the covered patio Patty modified to allow us access to the outdoors on even the hottest days. I knew we'd let it fall into disuse after this, the weather too brutal to bother. I knew we'd probably let some of our units fall into disrepair, Patty not around to help, our power tool lesbian happy to fit the stereotype for the good of the castle. Before she got sick, before the pneumonia that finally took her, I'd asked her to teach me things, show me how to be handy. I always hit my thumb with the hammer, or doused myself with the power washer, or messed up the clean lines of paint on trim. "Probably because you're bi," Patty would say. "That tiny bit of hetero dilutes my power," I'd agree. Turning back to the room, I caught Joan's eye. She read my thoughts and smiled sadly. "Okay," I say, rising from the table, touching the pad under my ear. "Shannon, don't leave," Kira says. The phone menu cycles in my ears and eyes, and I silently dictate a text to Vic. "Kira's gone. Please come." "Shannon, this isn't real," I say, and I was okay with that for a second, but no. "No, I want the real one. All of you. I don't want imaginary you." "What's Vic going to do?" "He's going to confirm that you're here, or that you're not, and bury your body out back." "Come on," she says. "You're not imagining this. You don't believe in life after death. Not really." I think of the last months as Kira's heart slowed and stalled, and I realized what would happen next. My adage, the one I routinely pulled out to my family of birth, to nosy assholes, to well-meaning friends. There's a difference between alone and lonely. I spent years single, living alone, mostly by choice, believing that idea, knowing I felt most safe alone. But when I knew I would be the last one, the last old one in our castle, the last to hold our memories, our stories, our filthy jokes. Was it true? Did a line exist between the fact of existing alone and feeling the empty hollow of lonely? And my choices, all of our choices, to not have children, to live fully without the burden of parenting, to defy our culture's mandate to breed. We were all of us secure in that choice. We were happy to point to our castle when people asked who would take care of us when we reached old age. We forgot that we would not all die together, that there would be an order, and someone would be last. It was entirely likely that as Kira died, my mind broke, that it wasn't equipped to be the last, that it brought me imaginary vision as a comfort, a shield against the emptiness. "I don't believe in any of this," I say. "You write about this stuff all the time." "That's different," I say, lying. Yes, I'd written and published some books with weird, fantastical, strange women and their stories, with some acclaim and no repercussions. But the story, the one I kept trying to tell, the one I resumed last night with the pages on the table before us, for years, whenever I worked at it, strangeness came. dreams and nightmares, but also deja vu, the slippery time that seemed to skip forward and back, the edges of madness, until I finally set the story aside once more. "You felt me," Kara says, her hand on mine, bringing me back to the moment. Perhaps another moment bridging on lunacy. "I'm here." Feeling isn't always reality, either. The first wake, a shock, and a party like we hadn't thrown in years. Marcus had made us promise with his eerie knowledge of how this would play out. We were drunk by mid-morning, just 30 minutes after watching Vic bury his first body. Another mean day, the humidity stopping up our sweat glands, making our water reserves and blood cells boil. We stood around our great hall, stiff gin and tonics in hand, and shared stories of our most drunken times. The winter, always and forever. Marcus's 40th birthday, when we rented a party bus and quickly lost our minds. Stripper poles and crying in bathrooms and blasting Belinda Carlisle through the open bus door, barfing and falling and cackling on the dance floor. We wanted to feel him with us, just as we wanted to feel his husband Peter and Kira's partner Stevie and all our friends that died before we made our castle reality. We wanted it, so we felt it. Was it real? Was Marcus there? Drunk with us, laughing along with our filthiest stories about strange cock and cunt, sending us pics of dicks he'd received from apps, remembering our slut days with Halcyon Light. And back, further back, looking at me and remembering our college days, the first days where we chose a family. Maybe the others didn't wonder such things. I did. I sit with Ghost Kira until I hear the main castle entrance unlock. When Vic's steps sound in the hall, I call to him to join me. I watch as he rounds the corner, walks into the kitchen. I watch his eyes, and they don't grasp onto anything except me. Kira squeezes my hand. "Hey, Auntie Shannon," Vic says, his voice thick. Biologically, he's Marcus's nephew. Really, he's the group's nephew. Some of us, including me, had nieces and nephews from blood relatives, but they lived elsewhere or loved elsewhere. They hadn't grown up in our midst, surrounded by all us queer aunts and uncles, considering us all family. Vic's mother, Marcus's sister, had made sure he would. "Hi, love," I say. I cock my head, then my thumb, pointing at the woman who sits next to me. He just shakes his head. "I'm so sorry." He's in his 40s, the same age we were when he was born. Thinning hair on top, bristly beard and hairy limbs. Despite our best efforts, he'd married straight, and he and Bess had two young boys. The bravery of it. Declaring and committing love. Generating new humans from that love. In our hot, ugly world. "Me too," I say. "Where is she?" I widen my eyes. Try again to point to the being sitting next to me, to get his eyes to catch on her shape, her solidity, the Kira-sized being with a shoulder touching mine. "Shannon," he says. I sigh. "In her bed." "Okay." He pulls me up gently, folds me into a hug. He has a large chest, one I can lean on and not feel a burden, a weight. "I'll take care of her," he says to the top of my head. "Thank you," I say. I feel Kira join our hug from behind me. "Do you want..." The question he'd begun to pose as our herd thinned. "Do you want to invite other people? To the wake? To the castle? To our lives?" Always, it was just us. "Just the burial," I say. "That's all." "I can stay over tonight if you like, Auntie." The last word showing his worry, his care. His unstated fear of what would happen to me alone. You know I'll be fine, I say, pulling away. He kisses me on the cheek, then slips out, down the hall to my dead friend. It doesn't mean I'm not real, Kira says, just because he didn't see me. I think it might. In the hall, all seven of us, still a few years out from the wakes, seated around Vic. Is it legal? He asked, his big hands splayed. We looked to Marcus, our retired lawyer, who shrugged. Sort of, he said. But we're beyond that now. I can do this, Vic said. I can help bury you out back, all of you, but wouldn't you rather have a service? Uncle Marcus, wouldn't you rather be buried next to Peter? Marcus put his hand on his nephew's. I loved Peter's body when he was in it, he said, but he's gone, so it doesn't matter where his bones are. Okay, Vic said, rubbing his eyes, but you really want to do a joint will, all seven of you? We all agreed, Marcus said, skimming his eyes over the full couches and chairs. Patty and Joan, Ben and Elliot, Kira, me. Okay, Vic said. Any remaining money, it goes to you, Marcus said, to keep this place. Keep it for you and your future after we're gone. You have other family, Vic said, looking around the seats at all of us. Are you sure? I thought of my brother, surrounded every holiday by his three kids and eight grandkids. I was always the weird aunt, the aloof one, the lady that lived alone, the pitied one. They never saw how blood family can fail you, how the wounds of poorly equipped parents can sting long into life. A gift for them, and a lack of vision. All of us in the hall, my chosen family, we nodded. Vic readied his tab for each of our signatures. He passed it first to Marcus. As we took turns, he caught my eye. Auntie Shannon, he said, draping an arm around my shoulders. This is important, I said, what you're doing. Thank you. Of course. You know, he said after a moment, I wasn't sure about this place when Uncle Marcus first showed me. Yeah? Yeah. Felt like it could be full of ghosts. My laugh had turned reedy, strung out, but I gave it to him anyway. Seriously, he said, these old buildings, they used to house so many people, and who knows what terrible things happened here, and he stopped himself. Look at you, I said, believing in that old-timer stuff. I'm sorry, that was rude. This is your home, and I'm shitting on it. Not at all, but if you go that route, use that logic, every place has ghosts. Maybe they do, he said. Wouldn't be too bad, I said, getting to haunt people, get the last word. Right? He laughed. And who knows, maybe there's other surprises in store, too. These old cunts always called me a witch, I said, pointing to my friends. Wouldn't that be funny if it turned out true? We called you lesbianish and witchy, said Marcus. So maybe at the end you go full les and full witch? Now that would be something, I said. I hear Vic down the hall, picking up the bones and flesh that used to be Kira. Next to me, Kira's ghost, or essence, or soul, my imaginary friend. I feel real, she says. If I was your imagination, would I feel real? I don't know, I say, suddenly deeply tired. You didn't want to be alone, Shannon, and now you aren't. Isn't that a blessing? Didn't we outlaw that fucking word? Well, she says, if you made me up, that came from your fucked up brain. I smile. The first day, move-in day. We let the young men grunt and sweat as they brought our things inside the building, while the seven of us sat in the great hall sipping rosé. Our eyes roamed over each other, over the room, up to the ceiling and down to the floor, bright with fire that we'd worried might be quenched. We trembled with excitement rather than our years. "We fucking did it," one of us said, and the rest erupted into cheers. I looked around the room at my friends, Marcus, Patty, Elliot, Ben, Joan, and Kira, my family. How lonely I'd been, how I'd lied. Alone and lonely didn't always differ. I was 71 and I felt home for the first time, at home. Outside the windows, black rain swirled. Outside the boundaries of our land, machinery hummed and invisible wires watched and listened, and the weight of living in the dying world hurt. Here, though, we didn't have to leave. Drones would deliver everything physical we would need. Everything else, the attention and company, the memories of our lives, the joy we could provide. In the hall, Elliot put on some music, Mariah and Salt and Peppa and En Vogue. I made them listen to a few punk songs, as I always did. Marcus added some Reba McEntire. Joan brought out cookies, and Elliot hung a framed picture of Superman, and Ben artfully posed some books on the hall shelves, and Patty organized a cupboard, and Kira knitted, and Marcus brought out another bottle, and we talked about a routine, a regular communal cocktail hour, followed by dinner, trading off among those of us who like to cook, and a Friday movie night, and a Wednesday show and tell night, and I smiled and smiled and smiled. The young men came in, told us they were done, and we gazed on them with exaggerated lust. Marcus and Ben and Elliot assumed their turn-of-the-century homo voice, telling the men at the start of their lives to flex, honey, to take off their shirts, to smile. And the men, they laughed at these harmless old codgers, these ridiculously old leches, these silly sexless sluts waggling their tongues. They left, and we laughed and laughed, told each other what we'd do to those men if only we could get our dicks up, our pussies wet, our backs straight, stretching out our real and imagined ailments getting in the way of our hedonism. And we drank and leaned on each other, and that was the start. I join Vic in the kirkyard as he finishes the burial. Kira's body the sixth in a line behind the garden greenhouse. No headstones. Not worth the money, we decided. We would just join the earth again and mingle together in the dirt, and that was that. My breathing mask itches, my rubber glasses pinch, and the hooded coverall is too snug in my crotch. But I wanted to come out, feel the reality of the world that was waiting for Kira and for me. Through his own mask, Vic mumbles some words. I can't hear and don't care. To my right, Kira whispers in my ear. I wish we'd chosen cremation. This is so sad out here now. And a row of urns wouldn't be, I say. We could have burned each of us, then mixed our ashes together somewhere, Kira says. You wouldn't have to look out the window and see all of us here. Apparently I'm going to anyway, I say. What'd you say, Auntie Shannon? Nothing, hun. Ready to go back in? You go on, Vic. I'll be in a minute. He squeezes my hand, pats down the dirt once more, and slips away. I stand at the end of Kira's grave, and she stands next to me. Remember all the times you showed your tits? I say. The ghost laughs. I stand by it. Remember when you passed out of my bathtub on my 42nd birthday? It was actually the floor, she says. Marcus got the tub. Remember when I had to help you pee at your wedding? You got to see the glory of my snatch. Remember? I remember it all, Kira says, because you do. The wind picks up. Pushes at me. You should get back in, she says. I'm the only one, I whisper. But you're not alone, Kira says, her bare hand on my plastic shoulder. I'm the last one that remembers our stories, I say. All the things we did, the jokes we told. I'm holding them all now. Silence. Only the wind's hot howl. Are they heavy? She says. I feel only the push of nature, the slight pressure of her hand, the tears pricking at my eyes, followed by the nausea and gut roil. No, I say. Good, she says. Keep them. Hold on to them as long as you can. I feel like I'm the queen of the castle, I say, but also the invading army, the knights, and the attacking dragon. My body holds it all, I say. The entire kingdom and the means to destroy it. Easy with the poetics, you show off. What I mean, I'm holding all of us in my body, but my body is breaking down and will die. And it won't just be me dying, it will be all of us. We're already dead, she says. With the realtor guiding us through our pads, her android voice in our ears and amenities scrolling over our eyes, we all walked through the building as a group, then broke off into pairs and individuals to suss out our curiosities. Kira and I wandered into the unit that would become the hall. I ran my fingers over the shelves, the walls, the fixtures. This could actually work, Kira said. I'm so sorry we didn't do this sooner, I said, before Stevie got sick. I know. She twisted her wedding ring. But I think they were happy to stay in our home, to die there. Are you sure you want to do this? I say. Leave your house? Without them there, she said, it's a haunted house. This will be so much better. Good, I said. I don't want to do this without you. It would suck without me, she said. It really would. You'd be so bored, she said. So fucking bored. And get so tired of talking about dicks and buttholes with the guys. Let's not talk crazy, I said. She slung her arm around my shoulders, her arm as weightless as a bird. We're going to have to help each other pee at some point, you know. We've done it before. There's no one else I want to wipe my ass for me, my dear. I know exactly what you mean, I said. Back in the castle, I finally convinced Vic I'm fine, that he can leave. That being the lone inhabitant will not turn me crazy so quickly as one night. He acquiesces with a hug and kiss on the cheek as Kira the ghost watches. We'll talk about what's next soon, Auntie Shannon. I nod as he waves and walks out the main entry. Maybe he's right, Kira says. Maybe it's not good for you to be here alone. I'm already talking to dead people, I say. How much worse could it be? Good Lord, have you learned nothing from horror movies? We'd attempt fate. I call the elevator and we ride up to the second floor. I think about the gears sticking, the elevator stalling, locking in place. Who will come to get me? I think about the hallways, the floors and the units, the stairs, my feet slipping, ankle twisting, hip cracking on a fall. Who will hear me yell? Choking on popcorn or chips, expiring without notice. It's a valid concern, Kira says. Where else am I going to go? There's nowhere else. Vic could help you find a place. Maybe even have you stay with him. Jesus, no way, I say. What an asshole I'd be. The elevator doors open and we enter the hall between our two units. What happens now? I ask. I don't know. I mean, do you sleep? Or are you just going to watch me all night? Being dead doesn't make me a perv, Kira says, or into you. Easy, I say, smiling. I think while you sleep, I'm going to explore, she says. See if I can find the others and Stevie. Do you want help? I can stay up for a bit. You're dead on your feet, Shannon. But I'm still alive. Go to bed. I'll see you in the morning. What if, I say, I picture it the next morning, waking in my bed, whipping open my door, looking for Kira, for any of them, and only seeing emptiness. It won't be like that, she says. Promise. I decide to believe her. I give her a hug, feel her body like a squeeze toy, kiss her on the cheek. I look in the direction of my rooms. But instead of going to bed, I go back downstairs, to the table. There's more to do. I'm not dreaming. That's my first thought as my eyes open and see a black and white forest. I feel a cool, light breeze that ruffles a few lone grayscale leaves in the monstrously tall trees. I smell static, the crisp of electricity run hot. I hear a background hum, an echo of a song I know but can't place. Copper saliva on my tongue. There are figures, silhouettes, moving in and out of the trees. Nothing I can focus on or make clear. Above them, high in the tree cover, I see other shapes, animals and birds. My stomach drops. This is familiar, this place. The shapes and lack of color, the movement. The shadow of a memory from the last time I tried to write that story. In front of me, a small clearing. A tree, more human-sized, less otherworldly, full leaves creating roundness, and a figure laying at its trunk. I move closer without thought. My walk feels strange. Is this how my legs work? Is this the feeling in my torso as my body gains momentum? It feels liquid and solid at once, the atmosphere pushing against me. My body feels hinged without oil, more creaking and tentative than even my elderly skeleton. The figure shifts as I come near, rises to a seated position. Now I can see it's a woman. Long dark hair, no clothes. In my body, I feel that thrum of recognition, the magnets moving and connecting in my ribcage. But my mind, it doesn't follow. She watches me move. Shashin, she says. Excuse me? My voice sounds strange, lighter, less strained. Ah, she says, modern English, yes, greetings. Hi, I say. You are not dead, she says. No, I don't think so. As I say it, I know it's true. I'm still in the castle, at the kitchen table, folded over the pages I've been filling, breathing, heart beating, snoring. But you're the last, the woman says. You're holding the weight of your dead. I look at her, concentrate. Try to find the straight lines of her shape, the arrangement of her face, but the shadow of the trees keep her parameters hidden. She stares at me for a long time. Long, but also short, because time is stretched and compressed here. In the waking world, I would look away, feel her eyes like the crawl of an electric zap, the soft itch of an insect. But I stare back. I haven't met one like you in a long time, she says. Like me? One who tells stories. You mean books? I ask. More than that, she says. You carry your family's stories, their lives, along with your own. Is that why? I ask. Why I can see Kira? And more, she says. Me, this place. Where are we? You know. I look up again at the canopy of branches above us, then lower to the impossibly verdant tree she sits under. Her shape begins to solidify. A mouth, a nose, eyes, a neck, arms, breasts, a round belly. Her skin dark, the black and white world allowing it to shine. I've been here. I'm sure of it. The last time I wrote, the last time I slipped into the black magic of creating, in my sleep, I'd come here. What's your name? She says. I'm Shannon. A long dormant impulse to shake her hand activated, one burned out of my body from pandemics and climate change and all the things the last century had wrought, the karmic end that old men denied would come. I bring my hand forward. And it's a young hand, one without the deep grooves of my veins and tendons, without the colors of age. I follow the hand up to my younger, thicker arms. I am naked like her, and my shape is one I'd left behind decades ago. I touch my hair, feel it long and uniform. And there is no shame in my nakedness or in my figure, just comfort and pride. I know that look, the woman says, the rediscovery of delight in your body, as a babe does, glorying in herself. The world is cruel, I say, always telling us our bodies are wrong. I know about cruelty, she says, placing blame where it does not lie. She stares, silent, waiting for me to ask, knowing I feel the answer already, that somehow, after years of writing books about angry women, hurt women, magic women, after shifting and seeking the root of it all, after years of attempts to find her, to write about her, to track back the hatred of our kind, to sift past myth and lies, after years of engaging with her story and becoming haunted as a result, after all that time, here she is. Who are you? I say, as she wants. You may have heard of me, she says. My name is Eve. This was the first part of the new audio drama, A Woman is a God, available in full July 9th. The show and its original music comes from Amy Lee Lillard, the co-creator and producer of Midwest Weird. She's also the author of three books, Exile in Guyville, A Grotesque Animal, and Dig Me Out. And she's the founder of Rebel Yell Creative, helping writers, community groups, and small businesses build, create, and resist through creative consulting, courses, and community. Find more and sign up for creative info and resources in the show notes. We've reached the end of season 2. We'll be back this fall with more weird stories. If you like what you hear, subscribe, like, and review the show. And if you want your fiction or nonfiction to appear on Midwest Weird, send us your work. Read the show notes for a submission link. Thanks for joining us, and stay weird.